attention, please. I think we're ready to get started here. It's a little past 8, but we'll just get going with this forum. And I'll try to make it so that we're out of here by 9:30. So thanks for coming tonight. And thanks also to those of you who are following us live on Twitter. it's a pleasure to have you all here. And we're hoping to talk a little bit about social media, Facebook, Twitter, things of that sort, and have a lively conversation here about what that means for us. So to start everything off, could I just get a show of hands to see who's got a Facebook account? How many people in the audience? Okay, all but two.
You piggyback on hers?
I don't spell Facebook. So.
All right.
I've signed off on mine for the months of being at home, and I went into withdrawal the first week.
Well, we'll talk about that tonight.
How about people be your friend randomly?
Yeah. I have real friends here at Holden.
How about Twitter? Can I get a show of hands to see who's on Twitter?
I don't know how to do it.
Okay, a lot less people, maybe 5. So we're here tonight to talk about these different types of communication and how they affect our lives, and perhaps what Jesus would do if he had social media at his fingertips. But that'll be more of a, we can go there if we want to. But I'd like to introduce our panelists tonight. We've got Martine Halverson-Taylor here on teaching staff this week. And then this is Liz Childs. She's on staff in the kitchen. And Joe Bach, who's also on teaching staff this week. And so I'll let each of them give a introduce themselves and say a little bit about what their involvement is with social media. And we can start the conversation there. Once they've introduced themselves, we can get into some discussion. Does that sound good?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
All right. Martine, would you like to start?
Sure. Well, Micah asked me to be on this panel, and he asked me, and I said yes, and immediately my stomach went, because I thought, I'm going to have to confess that I'm somewhat hypocritical about Facebook, which is, I approve of it and I don't approve of it. So in my own personal life, I found Facebook to be really just so much fun. I am out of, I'm going to date myself here, but I have been out of high school for 25 years now and out of college for a little over 20. And it has been so much fun in the last few years getting in touch with, you know, old friends that I normally would never have seen again or heard from. I have to say it is one of the guilty pleasures, first thing when I get to the office, you know, checking in for 5 minutes.
When you get to the office?
When I get to the office, yeah.
Absolutely.
I spend my whole time is with my 3 kids and my husband. I pack them off, I get to the office, I have my cup of tea, and I check in. I don't post a lot, though, I will say that. On the other hand, my daughter just turned 13, and she announced that meant she was old enough for Facebook. And I said, no, you know, that's what Facebook says, but I'm, you know, very hesitant to let her get involved with it, partly because she's very shy, and she still has trouble looking people in the face when she speaks to them, especially adults, and I am worried about it being a crutch. And the reason that I feel that way is that at my work life, where yes, I check in on Facebook, I am a professor, and all of my students have been on Facebook for a very long time at this point. I am struck by, first of all, how they are very hesitant to interact with their teachers in a sort of direct way. Very complicated requests come by email, and they don't call, they don't come to the office. In other words, it's become sort of another thing to put between us. When they write emails, they address us in ways that are sometimes oddly casual, like, hey, you know? And, you know, I don't really stand on formality a lot, but I don't think I ever would have written an adult in my life that way. Hey, you know? And I worry about that. And I'll just, I've gone on for a bit now, but I'll just end with my sort of my favorite anecdote, which was that New York University, not my university, but another university, New York University recently started having a class for its incoming freshmen, which was to learn how to do this. Hi, my name's Martine. I'm from New York. Where are you from? Yeah, exactly. So just that sort of, hi, how are you doing? Because they found that their incoming freshmen didn't know how to turn and sort of introduce each other, which I think we all remember as a ritual from freshman year. So that's my big, messy, hypocritical, contradictory answer.
Well said.
Hello, I'm Liz. I am going into my last year of college, and I started using Facebook pretty soon after it became available to students. Like, it started at Harvard and then became kind of a college thing where you had to be invited to it by somebody else. And my sister was in it, and, like, I don't know, I got invited into it. And you had to have a university email address to do it. So I started taking college classes my junior year of high school. So that's actually how I got into it. But so for a while, and I have pretty mixed feelings about it as well, but it's sort of complicated. It's partly complicated by the fact that it's so integrated into the way that people, I'm 22, people my age and around my age socialize in general. You know, like, I don't know exactly how the experience is for people out of college, or out of the traditional age. Like, maybe for you it's more about reconnecting with people and that kind of thing, but for us it's pretty integrated into the way that you meet people and become better friends with people, which I've had kind of mixed experiences with. On the one hand, it's been really positive to use because it's very convenient, and almost everybody I know is on Facebook, and it's pretty easy to find people that you know, and, like, you can find them through your friends and that kind of thing, and get invited to events and find out about stuff that's going on. So in that way, it's really helpful, and it is another kind of notch in the spectrum of interacting with people, where you don't have to sit down and write an email or call them. You can just be like, oh, I'm thinking about you, but I don't want to push it, kind of thing, or, you know, like, which is also a detriment. But on the plus side, it's very convenient and all that, and it is also really good for keeping in contact with people that you don't live close to, or live overseas, or, you know, that kind of thing, and for seeing pictures and catching up with people. So in that way, it's very positive. But it definitely can be a social crutch, and I didn't really realize that fully until this year, whenever I realized that some of the people that I interact with a lot in Springfield, where I'm from, where I go to school, I really know more so through their internet persona. And, like, not like an avatar or anything, just, like, through my interactions with them through Facebook. And that's really no way to build a relationship with somebody, even if it's just a casual, you know, talk to them at parties kind of thing. It really gives you a false idea of, like, intimacy with a person, like, as a friend. And I think that, actually, Mikey and I have talked about this before, where, like, one of the things you can do, you know, you all know this, but, like, you can put your favorite book or like your favorite music and all that stuff. And I mean, I do have a couple books that I consider my favorite book, but I want that to be a conversation, you know? Because like those are important to me for a reason. Like your favorite things are important to you because they were there at the right time in life, or that kind of, or you know, just whatever. And if somebody just sees like, oh, Lost Horizon is my favorite book, they don't understand the significance of that. And what's the point of putting something out that's insignificant, that's significant to me, if somebody else doesn't recognize the significance? So I don't know. I still have one because it is the way that people, one of the major ways that people interact with each other, and because I sort of like, it happened right at the right time for it to be part of the way that people my age socialize, but I definitely don't think it's totally positive. So.
Well, I have mixed views about social media. I guess I would start out by saying that it's been a source of providing our son and daughter an opportunity to ridicule me. In fact, I think one time Sue changed our status that we were married, and our son Nicholas writes back and goes, "Okay, Mom, it's good to know that you and Dad are married." You know, that's been declared on Facebook now. And I think that they like giving us a hard time about it. But I would have to say that from my own perspective, social media is a fantastic thing. Not especially for those reasons. And I'm looking at it from the standpoint of the ability for individuals to essentially be on-the-spot reporters who do not need a network through which to disseminate their information. Mm-hmm. I think that is a phenomenal improvement in the world. And I'll just give you a few examples. One is of course, the people in Iran who were being subjected to considerable oppression by their government. They were able to get their story out in part because of social media. The world, and this is the interesting thing about that, not only did the world see what was going on, but the oppressive government officials knew that the world saw what was going on. And I think that's a phenomenal thing. You don't need, you know, NBC and ABC or, you know, CNN or whomever to go in and take photographs and go through the struggle of, you know, getting the film out and all of that. I mean, that is, to a large extent, history. And some of the scholars who are looking at this social media have indicated that even though governments try to squelch the dissemination of this information, typically they're one step behind the innovation of the young people who understand it so much better. And so it's really an amazing thing in that respect. From the standpoint of what happened in especially Egypt, which is one that I'm more familiar with, the Egyptian youth movement used social media to track what was going on during the time of their effort to overthrow the government, the dictatorship of Mubarak. And they were able to squelch violent incidents that were occurring that would have discredited their nonviolent movement by tracking what was going on. Yeah, essentially, they used an early warning system. And it's very interesting because there's a big debate within the you know, kind of the violence prevention / social media crowd about whether using social media is really an advance in the ability to identify where something is going to blow up and where it's not going to. And some of them say that it's good for crisis mapping, and crisis mapping being in a humanitarian disaster. But it's not so good for early warning to violence. And in fact, it was used considerably in Haiti after the earthquake in Haiti. And I just want to share with you what happened at that point because it was phenomenal. There were thousands of mainly text messages, and a lot of people they think of Twitter and Facebook, but more than anything, at least in poor countries, it's text messages. And they create something called events data by starting out with a certain code that has been disseminated. In Haiti, they had like 10 different codes. One was where water is at. Another was where food is at. Another is someone needed to be extricated from a building, etc. So they had this basically list of codes, and what happened is a lot of the codes were coming in Creole, you know, which is a common language spoken in Haiti, and the Creole text messages. There were students at Tufts University and Stanford. I mean, I can't resist this one. At Stanford, they've literally got an institute. And when I first saw it, I couldn't believe the terminology. It's the Liberation Technology Institute, not the Liberation Theology Institute. Anyway, I've got a friend who's there now as a fellow or something at the Liberation Technology Institute. And he got all these Stanford students and all of his buddies at Tufts University to help translate and map this information on where you can get water and everything else. And so there were Haitian expatriates all over the world who were translating Creole and French into English, and then it was being posted onto a digital Google map. And the average time that it took to get a text message translated was 10 minutes. I mean, I just think that's incredible. In their sense of solidarity, they responded to help these people. And what's really interesting about it is that there was a person who has kind of been critical of the use of social media and that sort of thing as it relates to humanitarian intervention. And so, I mean, he's an international humanitarian aid worker, and I really understand where he's coming from. He got a hold of all of the events data from Haiti, and he analyzed it, and he concluded that this was of virtually no use to the UN or the international aid agencies like CARE and Save the Children and Catholic Relief Services. It really wasn't any help at all. And so he posts this on a blog. And that's the other thing. Blogs are incredible in this respect. And so there was this other individual who had been down in Haiti, and he was with this group called Ushahidi, which was the one doing the digital map for the people in Haiti. And he was with them, and he was riding along with some of these people who were going out, and sometimes they would get a report that something was such and such, and they needed to verify it. That's one of the big challenges with this sort of thing, the verification of the data. So they were doing that, and what they were finding was that it wasn't the aid organizations that were using the data. It was the family members and the friends of people who had gone through that earthquake, who had the ability to get onto the internet because they still had, you know, they were outside of the country. They saw how Ushahidi Haiti was putting the digital information on, or putting the information onto a digital map, and they were calling their friends and relatives, telling them where to get water, where to get food, where to go to a clinic, etc., where to get an amputation if they needed one. And they were saving their lives. So, okay, so maybe it wasn't all that great for the UN or for the international NGOs. It was great for the people themselves, who were doing far more than the aid agencies were to help those people. So I leave you with that thought, that it's not all that bad.
Well, yeah, we've got a couple different avenues to talk about this here. What Joe's talking about is sort of feels a little different from this social interpersonal stuff that Martine and Liz mentioned, and so I'd like to open up the conversation. I should introduce my own views on this a little bit briefly. I got on Facebook when I started college in 2006, and I quit in 2008 because I decided that I didn't like the influence it was having on me, and I didn't want to be a part of it. The influence was that I spent a lot of time on it. And I felt like it was diminishing my relationships by putting me in touch with everybody I'd ever possibly met. You know, everybody at a finger's reach away. It was like, oh, sure, we don't need to talk now. I'll catch you later. I can post on your Facebook wall or send you a message or poke you. I don't know if they still have the poke function, but that was big when I was starting Facebook. Anyway, it just... I wanted to free myself of that, and I did. And I found it was a challenge to be a college student. Even I went to St. Olaf College, and even there, where there's strong community and everybody lives pretty much on campus, I'd go to dinner some nights with my friends, and they'd all be like, "So, you excited for this party tonight?" And I'd say, "What party?" No one had told me about the party, mm-hmm. and they're all like, "Well, it was on Facebook," mm-hmm. and. I didn't mind being left out in that way because I was around the people and I could figure it out, but I guess to summarize, I see the value in Facebook and the way that it helps people connect. Joe's discussion of its value is very convincing to me, but I am concerned about the way that it influences that it influences young people and their learning of social skills and how to interact with others, especially with adults. And I'm also, I'm also a little bit concerned that it centers us on ourselves more so than we'd like to. At least that was an experience that I had. I would scan through my photos and try and imagine what someone who had just recently met me and looked me up on Facebook was thinking of me by looking at the pictures that were tagged of me. That sounds silly. And maybe it's just me, but it's like a virtual self, and I was crafting myself to appear a certain way, and that just felt a little funny to me. So that's where I come from with this, but it's a lively conversation, and I welcome you guys to offer questions up to these people or to the whole group.
This isn't a question, but it just made me think what you're saying is that I'm new to Facebook, and the only reason I do it doesn't kind of fit in with my life very well, but I find that friends who have moved, all my other friends know what's going on with them and their children, and I don't, and I feel out of the loop, and so I've gotten on Facebook for that reason. But what I see about Facebook that I find disconcerting and something I'll worry about with my kids is that it seems like what people put out there is what they wish that they were. You know, I have friends who I see on a regular basis, and I see the picture, and I'm like, sweetheart. But it's like this, you know, supermodel side view, and I'm like, who took that picture of you? And, you know, so it's like putting forth your best version of what you wish you were. And I wonder, when I'm looking at people's lists of their music or the movies, if they're trying to craft what they want people to see in them. And it makes me worry that what happens then when they do run into you? Because you might not be as good as your Facebook profile or whatever you call it makes you out to be. You know what I mean? That you can create this false relationship with somebody based on what you wish you were instead of what you are.
So when you sign, you go, you don't look anything like.
Well, it's just.
I think those are some very real concerns, and they're. As you're saying, they're a problem for people of all ages, but I think especially for younger people, where they're learning how they interact with others, and they're learning about they're challenging social boundaries and finding out with Facebook, I think with not just Facebook, with email, with text messaging, with all the digital interfaces that we can use to communicate with one another. Young people who are still not sure what's appropriate to say to who can often misstep a boundary there in a really severe way, and I think that these technologies enable that to happen in a way that it wouldn't necessarily happen face to face. So if I'm 12 years old and I just got a phone and I can text, I might text something to someone that I wouldn't dare to say to their face. And I think that especially in the case of Facebook, where is often very public, can be a really, really bad thing.
Because you're checking out of the difficulty of actually interacting with people, but then you also miss out on the reward of interacting with people. So, because I mean, really, interacting with people sometimes is awkward, and we don't know what to say, and we make mistakes, but at least we have feedback, and like you can kind of, I mean, that's like how we learn behavior, is by the feedback of other people and like the examples that are given. And I think that it creates kind of an emotional disconnect from the idea of even interacting with people. You know, if you don't have to take responsibility for, in a way, for the things that you say, and even if you don't know better, I mean, or you just kind of don't think about it, or you just kind of do it without it, yeah, without even thinking about it, you run the risk of being misinterpreted or straining things that don't need to be strained, or just, you know. I mean, it's not always negative, of course. Sometimes, I mean, it's like writing a letter. Sometimes you can say things that you couldn't say otherwise. So it can be positive also, but I don't know. I think it's more meaningful to interact with people.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to put a little perspective on it from a, well, from a different age perspective. I think one of the largest growing groups of users of Facebook are grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be a valuable, personally valuable interaction. We have grandkids all over the country. So we would not have the interaction. Sometimes it's direct interaction, sometimes it's indirect interaction with friends or cousins or whatever it might be. So there's a plus there that keeps us connected with them and extended family. And we had another observation, which I'd throw in to hear what other folks have either heard or seen, and that is, we had the unfortunate situation a couple of years ago of losing a 25-year-old. And there was a memorial service, and there was the usual mourning period and a grieving period in the normal way. But there was a grieving period, and again, there is still a grieving period going on Facebook, related to the lost person.
Mm-hmm.
Their friends, some relatives, friends, still to this day, will go on and send a message to the deceased. And it's a kind message, it's a reach out message, it's a memory message, and it's obviously meeting a need of the individual who's posting. But that, I think that's a very valuable extension to other actions of communication.
When I saw the movie Social Networking, I was shocked and appalled because it was all this stuff about Facebook that was absolutely horrific, and I was kind of ashamed that I was a part of it. But the thing I realized about Facebook is that you have so many choices as to how you use it. And you don't have to use it for any of the purposes that are in the movie. I use it to keep in touch with my kids who are all over the country, but I also have three friends in their mid-80s who don't travel, and the truth is they're not people that I would email, but they are online. Some of them are pretty much housebound. I mean, it's amazing that somebody who's 88 is telling me what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we get health updates, and I mean, it's really very exciting. But I think the really important part is that we, you know, we're not 12 or 13, and we can write, we do know how to have conversations, we have faith, we have ideas, we can use them. I mean, we can write beautiful things on Facebook, we don't have to write these stupid posts. So we can share, you know, I came across this article, or I read this great book, and so I just use it as a place to try to be myself as I am, in my own age group, in the world, in front of my kids and a few friends. And I don't do it too often, but yeah, I check in and see who's there, see if my daughter's okay. But yeah, it can go terribly awry, but I think it could be used in a way that is very seldom acknowledged. Mostly we see what's wrong with it, and don't use our writing skills in a way that could be very powerful.
It just seems to me there's an age differential where, and I'm old now, and I admit that, because I see it as a tool. It's a
great tool, and you can use it for all these things, and you can connect and do that, but it's not my social norm. And for the kids coming up now, it is their social norm. The texting, the way they talk, the way they write, it's all changing. And the thing that's going to happen, and it's happened with every generation, is that they're going to go into the business world, and suddenly they're going to be in charge, and that kind of communication is going to be accepted. Mm-hmm. And that kind of writing is going to be accepted. It's not going to happen very quickly, but you know, gays were never going to be allowed in the church. Poof, you know, it's kind of a non-issue in many, many religions, because it's just become more accepted throughout our society. I mean, it's much more. Things that we think will never change, change. And so language isn't a static thing, and how we relate to each other isn't a static thing. So I think that's the big difference between Facebook as a tool and Facebook as a social media. Hmm. And the kids coming up are, that's their social media. And unless we ban it.
Can I just, I want to actually corroborate what you're saying, because, you know, when I went to school, the goal was to be able to write a critical essay with a thesis and an introductory paragraph, 3 points,
footnotes.
And a, yes, footnotes, and a conclusion. And now we're being encouraged to vary our writing assignments because they need to know how to write an email with a punch. So writing assignments used to be 750 words, and now we're being asked to make sure that they're shorter assignments, like 100 words. Hmm. Write something compelling in 100 words. The next thing is going to be a tweet. And you know what? That's, I mean, I think that is real. I mean, I you know, I sort of laugh at it, and I feel sort of old and antiquated because it's so foreign. But, you know, if we're trying to teach people how to be persuasive, we're going to have to teach them how to be persuasive in 100 words or 10 mm-hmm. words. So you're right, the communication is already changing.
Oh, if I could just leave one thing real quick. I think that you brought up a good point that society and communication and, you know, all, well, those are kind of tied, of course, but they're dynamic. And I think the difference with social media is it's so public and it's so populist. So everybody can see it going on, and everybody has an opinion on it, which is valid, of course. But nobody really understands what kind of an effect it has on us the long term. Because, I mean, really, like, society has changed so much, an unbelievable amount in the last 150 years. And, like, Facebook hasn't even been around for 10 years. I don't think it has. I think it started in, like, 2004 or 5 or something. I'm not sure exactly. But it's, and it can definitely be a force for good, obviously, in, like, in interpersonal and humanitarian ways. But I don't think we fully understand how it can affect the way that we interact with people on a daily basis. And I think that's where the fear comes from, with good reason. Because maybe it's, there are detrimental and positive things.
Can I ask you a question? So you've already said you withdrew, and it didn't seem to have any great impact, except you didn't know where the parties were, which in college would be.
Yeah, you may be missing more than you know.
I know.
That may be a good thing.
Maybe a good thing for him. He looks easily swayed. If you choose,
looks easy.
If you choose to pull out of Facebook, what kind of social impact do you see that for yourself?
Well, I lost my phones last summer, and then I went to Holden, or I was here for like 6 months, and I left in January, and then I got a new phone. And so in a way, that's kind of another, you know, I guess, aspect of, or tool of social media. And with that, it was kind of cool because then I had to think about who do I want to keep in contact with. So it was actually kind of a positive thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that it would, well, you know, I mean, like any interaction is a two-way thing. So it depends on where my friends are at. You know, like it may change my reaction to interacting with other people, but that can only go so far, you know, like people have to return your calls. And you know, like you have to be able to
but that's the
make plans
Facebook.
To
you
hang
don't
out.
Have to be there. And nobody makes plans ahead of time anymore, hardly ever. It's like
yeah.
Now social interaction the way it is, you can't take everybody who's on Facebook and email and suddenly expect them to stop doing that and start actually making plans ahead.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, or like before we had phones, you know. I'm not that old. But before we had phones, they would make plans the night before when you saw your friends, I'll meet you at, you know, wherever on Tuesday, and everybody mm-hmm. would need to show up and not show up. But now it's like, you know, it's happening now.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good point. That sort of what I was thinking more of was how would my social interactions be changed? How would they be? I guess it would be like a firing process, you know, mm-hmm. like as in wood fire, not like losing a child. but because I think that losing Facebook, not you know, getting rid of my Facebook, would make me think a lot more about the way that I interact with people. I mean, I try to think about that a lot in general, but. So it would change my attitude towards interacting with people, like making each interaction more meaningful because that's what it's going to be until I see them again. That's what our friendship will be until I see them again. But, I mean, with any interaction with another person, you also have to be aware of what they're experiencing and what they're used to, you know? This is something I noticed whenever I left Holden, because I took a semester off from school and left here in January, where I was very ready to have like open, comfortable, like frank conversations with a lot of my friends, even friends that I was like good friends with, but they were more used to those barriers, and so like some people like were really open to it, and it was a great thing. But other people kind of got freaked out by that, you know? It's like somebody standing really close to you, you know? Like, do you think, oh, this person cares about me as an individual, like, they want to get to know me? Or do you think, like, I'm not comfortable with this, like, do you back away? And so I think that's another thing that has to be taken into consideration, just because it is so prevalent with mm-hmm. if people my age.
I don't know if you think that's
Yeah.
For me, the Facebook, I've been on it almost since it started, and lately it had become an addiction with me, and I think that's something that our generation is really going to struggle with. I think that's going to become, like, you'll start to see, like, F.A., you know, like, Facebook Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was talking to some good friends about it, and I was like, I'm thinking about, like, shutting down my account, and they were both just shocked, and they wouldn't let me do it. Because they knew I was coming here, and that was part of the reason I was coming here, and you know, it was one way to sort of stay in contact. But that's something that it's like I want to know how we're going to deal with our generation just being totally encumbered by this mm-hmm. Facebook interaction. I worry about it a lot. It makes our communication just so stifled in so many ways that, you know, I'll be reading this book that was written like 50 years ago and wonder how this communication style was going on between these two people, and because it's not something that we're accustomed to anymore. So like long descriptions, like you were saying, the 100 word essays, that scares me a lot that we won't be able to do that. And well, I think that's my question, is like, how are we going to deal with this? Because that's something my generation especially, I see a lot of positive things about Facebook, but I also see a lot of trouble in the future because of things like that.
I don't know. I mean, I think it would be a mistake to think, you know, that it's all going to be bad. You know, I think the thing that I'm sort of aware of is that you all are on the cusp of something new. You know, we all sort of check in, and we are who we are, and you know, we use it, as one of you said, as a tool, and it doesn't define us. You know, you're growing with it, and it is maybe more defining. I mean, there was I mentioned that I teach at UVA, and the other big university in state is Virginia Tech. And we had, you know, this terrible shootings there several years ago, and many of my students, of course, their other good friends from high school had gone to the other school, Virginia Tech. And they were discovering who had lived and who had died via Facebook. And they were trying to figure out whether or not it was tacky to continue to refresh various people's pages to see if they had posted. And I mean, I just had to say, I don't know. I don't know what the protocol is. I don't know how you're supposed to conduct yourself. And I was very aware of the fact that, you know, I have a certain remove from it, and that, you know, your generation, my students, are growing with it, and they're discovering something that's very new, and it's very raw, and it has the potential for amazing good. I have to say, if I weren't involved in a revolution, I don't think it would occur to me to post it on Facebook. That's brilliant. You know, that's the good of it. And then there's the hard stuff, which is having a fight with someone, or, you know, God forbid, trying to find out if one of your friends has made it out alive.
If I could just say, I think it's you know, what I'm hearing is that it's both positive and negative, and there seems to be an age issue there. You know, maybe we need to say, you know, kind of like alcohol, no Facebook or Twitter until you're 21. but I do want to point out, even the instant thing is beneficial. I mean, in China, it's like instant protest. Everybody goes to the corner over here. It's on Facebook or Twitter or it's text message. And they meet at that corner, they protest, and then it evaporates. I mean, it's like it allows them to still have protests despite the oppressiveness of their government.
And then do they go home and Facebook about it?
You know, I don't know about that. I doubt that they do.
Do they talk to each other while they're there, or do they go home and talk about it?
I mean, the problem is that, you know, the authorities will follow up, and they don't want too much of a digital trail, if you will, you know. But I mean, it's happening all over China, and it could change China in a way. It's giving them an outlet that is not violent to try to bring about change. And I think about, you know, the series of books that Walter Wink wrote in Engaging the Powers, and how Christ really tried to engage the powers, and how what would Jesus email, or what would Jesus text message, or what would Jesus tweet, or whatever. Jesus would have tweeted in Engaging the Powers, because he didn't have to go to NBC and ABC and everybody else. He could go directly to, in a sense, the masses. And so
it's a wonderful tool.
It can be. I'm all in favor of 21 and below. None of it. After that. And you can start a Facebook anonymous group too.
One thing that hasn't been raised yet is how effective Facebook can be for business. I'm a personal trainer, and my business has just boomed because of Facebook. And I attach my blog, I attach my Twitter. You know, there's so many different ways to protect yourself on Facebook with all of the different choices that you can make about blocking, you know, certain things and creating different groups. I have my networking group, I have my high school group, I have my Snohomish County group, and I can choose who I want to see certain things. You know, I don't want people that I don't know to see pictures of my children. So I block everybody, you know, that I don't want to see pictures of from certain posts, and I think that there's a way to be very responsible on. So that, I think that should be a part of the conversation, is just being responsible with whatever you do, whether it's social, business, humanitarian, what have you.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
A couple of things. Would Jesus tweet? Maybe he would engage the powers and principalities, or maybe he would be an alternative or countercultural. Maybe he would be a Micah and say, "I'm gonna live differently than the culture." I think about how we're a culture that has chosen, I think, subconsciously and consciously to let technology define us. We have chosen to let that be the leading edge of who we are. And because a new technology comes, we think, well, that just must be the way the world is. But no, we have decided to have that be the way the world is. And I think it's part of the Christian walk, I think, is always thinking critically and maybe realizing that we're called to live an alternative to the world. So I wanted to say that. The other thing I want to say was I have a former student that's in the Peace Corps in Ukraine, and he's online and he Skypes and he texts and he looks on Facebook and he's connected to the world. Okay. I also have a friend whose daughter is in the Peace Corps in Botswana, same age, early 20s. For the first 8 months, she didn't have any access to computer. And then she got access to computer and being online. And she's reflecting on that. What's the difference? And what does that mean for my ability to be present in Botswana? And so I guess the thought is, if I'm always able to be some other place, how does that affect my ability to be present here?
Do you want to weigh in on that?
I mean, ELCA has Facebook. I get messages from them every day. I get messages from a lot of activist-type organizations. I read Nicholas Kristof quite frequently on Facebook. I mean, there's activism going on in our country because of Facebook, too. It's not quite as dramatic as China, but it's a way for me to consolidate a lot of people that I like to hear and I'm fed by, and that I normally wouldn't. I don't get the New York Times every day or CARE, you know, sends messages about the famine or whatever. And so it's a way for me to educate myself about what's going on in this country and the world, and that's what I like the most about it. It's a way to consolidate bits of information that mean a lot to you. And it's not quite as dramatic as China, but you get yourself connected in with people who feed you or organizations that feed you and vice versa. So,
if I could reference the comment made a few minutes earlier about being here now, basically the effect that Facebook has on your ability to do so. I've been in Holden for about 6 weeks now. And I mean, I was a pretty average Facebook user in college, I think, which meant, you know, every day, many times a day, not to the point where I wasn't getting other things done or I felt encumbered by it, but it was definitely a primary way to find out what was going on in my world. And then I came out here, and without any conscious thoughts, I find myself really not logging in as much because it doesn't really relate to my world anymore, you know? There are still things going on, but it's not as if I could participate in real time. You know, I can't go to this party, I can't talk with this person about this thing they posted, so it just becomes less meaningful to me because it's not in relation to Holden Village, the reality that is here, so.
Mm-hmm. But if Holden Village got Facebook?
Huh?
Here they'll have Facebook.
Yeah.
And it's Facebook, and you can access to it. I mean, but there's like how many computers that you can actually access Facebook on?
Most of the staff at laptops.
Oh, do they? Okay. So you guys just don't use it because you have so many community gatherings where you talk amongst yourself? Do you feel
yeah.
Like the...
And I could just go over a chalet and talk to my friend Kaya about this thing and not, you know, write on her wall. It's always a bit weird to do that, I think, when you're in such close proximity.
Wouldn't you do that in a dorm?
Huh?
Wouldn't you do that in a dorm? Right, but I don't think I would message with my close friends. I think that's like almost an etiquette thing on Facebook. You don't message around people's walls. You can just go talk to them. It's just, it seems a bit strange almost. I don't know if that's the way I would.
Yeah, I would confirm that the only people I message are people who are in like other countries, and the only people I message around me are posting articles or anything like that.
Yeah. If you want to give
rarely,
like a long informed response.
Rarely, if ever, post on any of my close friends who are in my vicinity.
Yeah.
Ever.
If anything, it's a sign of immaturity kind of on Facebook. Like, if you've got like you're like clingy girlfriend posting all over your wall, I'm like, really? Like, he's right there. Oh yes.
But I would just put in one real technical thing. They don't actually have Facebook in China. It's blocked, and they use something that's called QQ. So there is not Twitter or Facebook in China.
Okay.
For future conversation. Mm.
Sorry. That's good to know.
So what other protocols are there on Facebook?
There's a lot of them. I mean, like, as far as how I consider my Facebook network of people, I use Facebook to contact people when we're moving away from each other. So, for example, with staff here, I don't Facebook them or Facebook friend them until their departure day or something like that, until it becomes relevant to keeping in contact with them. I also don't message people all the time. Do you have this information or can I get this phone number? It's not really actually an interpersonal tool or like to develop a relationship at all. In my experience, it just kind of, for people from long distances to do quick maintenance, it's kind of maintenance. It's not an actual source of, I don't build friendships on Facebook at all.
I would also add that I see people who post their every doing and every, like, you know, I had this great meal, dessert was awesome. I'm like, why are you telling me this? It's strange. So I tend to gauge people's maturity level almost by how much they're just spewing onto Facebook, you know? That's a bit judgmental, I'm sorry.
No, but there is. And also, when we were talking earlier about profile pictures and having your album and everything like that, you know, to some degree it is grooming an image, but I think, at least among my peers, that's kind of assumed when you see a person's profile picture. I don't look at a person's profile picture and really actually that's how they are. And I also, like, there's also, you kind of judge people for writing too much on Facebook, for using shorthand on Facebook. Like, I'm very judgmental about bad grammar. Like, I don't know if this helps make you feel better now about generations, but I actually find that older people tend to try to use hip lingo. And that makes me really uncomfortable. I really like periods and capital letters and, you know, proper address. So
I think I see more people posing as intellectual and well-informed and worldly on Facebook than I see slang, quite frankly.
And if I could bring a point, these three all went to St. Olaf, small school with an interconnected community. Mm-hmm. I think it's obviously a wonderful thing, which I think, and like we're all different people and like with different life experiences and stuff, of course. And I think that is maybe somewhat a little bit of a factor in this. Like, I go to a school with 20,000 students, and this is my own decision, of course, made for different reasons, but I don't really have a solid community there. There are people that I see there, and I have good friends from my hometown, which is where I go to school, but there is not a sense of community at all in the same sense. From what I've experienced of visiting St. Olaf and attending my school. And so I think that it really has affected the way that, I mean, it definitely has affected the way that the people that I know interact with each other, because we don't have that built-in community in the same way. So we're, but the hang-up that I think I have, the major term for the hang-up that I have with Facebook is emotional reliance. You know, Because it's like, you have a reaction, whether it's conscious or subconscious, to seeing the face of somebody that you know, that you know outside of Facebook, because otherwise you wouldn't be friends with them. And I think that sometimes we can mistake that sort of like, oh, I recognize this person, good memories. We can mistake that for an actual interaction with somebody. And we become dependent upon that. And that's no replacement for actually interacting with people. So I think that it kind of can create a sort of isolation, because we think that that's community. We even use the term community, like online community, which I just think is so misleading, you know? Although, of course, the difference is with humanitarian stuff or disasters, like the tornado in Joplin is an hour away from our hometown, and so like I have lots of friends that are from Joplin or work there or live there, and so it's very important to me that I see, you know, that they were okay. And the same thing actually with the like terrorist attacks in Norway. Like, I went to school there for a while too. And so that's the kind of thing where I definitely see what you're saying. And of course, like, we see it in the news and stuff too, that it was a huge tool and major motivator major tool for those kinds of things. So, I mean, obviously it's very useful in that sense. But I think that apart from those kind of events, to use a Facebook, well, not specifically a Facebook term, the sort of day-to-day interaction, or the day-to-day use, is what worries me. The sort of learning this kind of thing.
This is Kevin. I see John here, and I wondered, John, do you use Facebook for political purposes, and what do you use?
Lots of friends. I have a political page where people can be a supporter. I think I get confused about the various pages. There's a campaign page, a supporter page, and then which is public officials can have.
And he doesn't maintain them.
I don't do it too much. And then the personal one, which is the one most people sign up on, there's a limit of some, I think it's 5,000 or something. I'm not near that. Under 3,000, but people add, and I don't know all the people who add as friends. But the only awkwardness is because I only post things like things I write or concerns I want to get out to people. Beyond that, I don't post, hey, today we went here and we did this. I don't tell them anything like that. But then if family or friends or others send stuff and post it on my wall, they're sharing it with thousands of people. And so that hasn't bothered me. I haven't thought about it a whole lot, but I use it because it's a very obvious way to, I don't check it enough to always catch on to events that I should be at, but I do try and watch it because there are events, I should be, rallies, other things I should be aware of. But so I do try and do that. I have a couple of people who watch things like that for me on it, and then I use it to post. But I think it's a very useful tool for some of the things that they said. I guess I see it as a business tool. And then other than that, yes, some people who friend me are high school classmates I haven't heard from for 30 years, and that's kind of neat, but I don't spend a lot of time on it.
But do you blog and tweet and do...
I have a Twitter account. That's one that I'm told that it's not political, it's not proper etiquette for Twitter for me to have somebody else tweet for me, so I actually tell the person what I want to tweet. So I've never actually sent out a tweet. I don't know how to. I've actually written the things for somebody to tweet for me. But with Facebook, I'm told I could have. The only things I put out there is I'll put out a statement or something, and I probably do that an average of once, twice, maybe three times a month. So it's for political purpose. I see it as work-related, and yes, there's a social aspect to it as well, and it's nice to keep up on family and friends from time to time.
Well, we're getting on with the time here. I'm just wondering if, really quickly, if we could maybe have a final reflection on what you guys, as panelists here, thought of our conversation tonight. And then on top of that, I would encourage this conversation to continue going on. I particularly like the under 21, no Facebook idea, or something like that. Anyway.
Could you tell that to my daughter, John?
I'll be happy to.
Just a couple quick words, if you feel like saying anything.
Well, I mean, to pick up on your question, would Jesus have tweeted? You know, Joe had one opinion, Ron had another opinion. I'm not sure. I think I maybe am a little more of Ron's school. I think Jesus would have taken people by the hand and sort of looked them in the eye, and he would have closed down his Facebook account. But of this, I am convinced, Paul would have tweeted. Hard to think of his epistles as technology, but that was the cutting edge. And so I'd like to think that the church, you know, is both and. It's extremely personal, it's extremely boundary breaking, and it's also at the forefront of new technologies which can be used for good and for ill, and which it attempts to use for good. So.
I mean, I think that it's too big and complicated and dynamic of a thing to have, for me to have any effective closing statement, but, you know, to have any definitive opinion on it, plus everybody has a different opinion on it anyway, but I think that it's good that we have a conversation about it, because that's what we want to have, conversations. Mm-hmm. With or without social media. And so I think that's the sort of a heartening thing. So.
Well, one thought that I have is that you could, and maybe this is because I've been looking at, you know, these different approaches, but there would be a way to mathematically disallow people to communicate on social media if they're in close proximity with one another. And you could, you know, vote on it. You know, you could say, at this middle school or at this high school or at this college, the vote has been that we are going to disallow people from using Facebook and Twitter, especially because there have been instances of bullying, of sexting, of whatever, and people have been mortified by it. There have been suicides, and that's happening. Mm-hmm. So, on the other hand, and I think that our society is struggling with this because of the mobility of people. They want kind of the small town feel, even though they're living in a vast metropolis, mm-hmm. or their families have moved hither and yon, right? So, I think that institutions, particularly that are working with young people, could make an informed decision about whether to disallow Facebook, and they could negotiate an agreement with the whatever social media company that it is, that we've decided that people in this age range will not be using this, and that functionality could be added to the software. So it's a final thought.
Add one thing to that?
Sure.
I think it's really important to remember that Facebook is a product of our society. It's not a cause of it. And so anything that has manifested itself by way of Facebook, at least at this point, because it's so early, is from our society. And so I think the bigger question is not just... I think the bigger thing that we should address is, what are the things about Facebook and the way that I present myself and the way that I interact with people that are positive, and what are the negative things, and how can that carry out throughout my daily life and beyond, you know? Because we live in suburbs, we have this individualistic, isolated mentality. Not completely, obviously, but at least partially. And I mean, Facebook is a reflection of that. And so just not having Facebook, I think that's a, you know, interesting concept, is not going to change in some very present things in our society. So it's more than just this manifestation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks again for coming. And I'd like to remind you that this session was sponsored by Google+.